Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa, and we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today, we are talking with Susie Carlberg of Christopher Bridge Cellars and Satori Springs Vineyard, and also Mick Mitchell, wine buyer at the Astoria Co-op and distributor of Mountain People's Organic Wine and Beer. I hope I have that right, Mick.
Oh, you got it great.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you so much. So can you tell us a little bit about yourselves? We just want to give our guests, give people an understanding of where you come from. Maybe Susie, do you want to go first?
Well, we started to make wines in 2001 in the Willamette Valley here in Oregon. We're a little bit on the east side of the valley, so many people don't recognize we even exist because we're not in sort of the middle of the valley where most of the people come to see the names on the blue signs, the tourist directional device. So we've done wines for over 10 years now, made the wines because we actually started growing fruit in 1998 when we planted the first block of the vineyard. And then, of course, it takes time to come to that first harvest, which was in 2001. And we had our first 40 cases of Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir.
Oh, my gosh.
But that was a small amount at that time. So we've slowly built it up a little bit. And also because of the small quantities, we've not really been very much distributed. And that's also part of the reason why a lot of people don't necessarily know the name. But we're trying to change that.
Wow, I feel lucky here on the coast that we actually are able to get some of your wine. So maybe, Mick, tell us about your story. Where do you come from?
Well, I grew up in the Portland metropolitan area. My grandparents, they had a farm up north in Ridgefield. They were the ones that basically started out in the area. It's about 100 miles from here. I know that my grandpa, he would travel down to the Long Beach Peninsula in the 30s with his family and their Model A's and T's.
Wow.
And set up their tarp canvas tents, and my whole life we've kind of been connected to this region, and we'd come visit here a lot. And so they were farmers. And so
what did they grow?
They had a fruit orchard, and then they also had vegetables and cows and all sorts of other animals before I came along. But I love food, and I've been working at the Astoria Co-op for almost 13 years now.
Wow,
that's a long time.
It's a long time.
You've seen a lot then.
And I've been working with the organic beer and wine distribution for about 3 years now. So, and it's a kind of a connection between the two because it's an organic beer and wine distribution. So
maybe we could start there.
Sure.
What makes an organic beer or wine?
Well, that's a great question. It's different in different parts of the world. In the United States, it's really in the first phase of the farming, which is how the vines are grown and whether or not there's been weed control chemicals used or growth chemicals used.
Do organic wineries go through the same certification process that farms go through? So are they USDA certified organic?
I believe so, yes. In fact, you'll see USDA on the label.
Okay, because I know that even to use the word organic,
exactly,
you have to be certified. Even if you're using organic practices,
exactly,
you're not allowed to use the word organic.
And then also in Europe, in the second phase of wine, is the use of sulfur dioxide. So you'll see a lot of sulfur-free on the labels of wine, so that's something to kind of keep an eye out for. But in the United States, you can produce an organic wine but still add sulfur to it. So you'll have wines that contain sulfites, more than just naturally occurring.
So I assume the wine industry is a little like maybe the rest of the organics in that a lot of people might be using organic practices and being very sustainable, but may not have gone through the certification process.
Okay. And I think a lot of smaller vintners, especially like Susie here, her and I have had long conversations about this topic. Susie,
absolutely.
What did you describe maybe if that's okay to say.
Yeah, maybe talk about your farming practices.
That's
your
been our predicament. We, from the very first start, decided that we wanted to farm very safely and healthy for the benefit of our farm, which has been our family for over 60 years now. And we live on our farm, so it makes good sense to be very cautious about what comes to the farm. And in the organic sense, when you farm, you really just want to not just avoid chemicals, but you also want to avoid bringing any other substances to your farm, if at all possible, including fertilizers, including organic fertilizers, if possible, because it really upsets the equilibrium of that space, and it is really an entire ecosphere. So we are very conscious of that, but in the beginning, of course, it's very expensive just to have all these certifications.
Sure, yeah.
We feel ideologically we are there with our organic program. We are live certified. That means low-input viticulture and enology. So we pass the standard on Salmon Safe and these other, I want to say these other requirements that are part of that farming, but it's not on the label because you have to pay more money to get everything, you know, on paper. So unfortunately,
it's a big process, and it's a lot of record keeping too. I know that our farm has really struggled with: do we become organically certified or not? And I mean, have you found that it's affected things, your sales at all? Do people say not buy your wine because it's not certified organic?
No, in fact. I would say that people get to know us and they trust us. And I think that is really the best way to purchase your products, to get to know the producer a little bit personally.
Yes, totally.
And then you have a chance possibly to see behind the scenes also. You know, people come to our vineyard and they see that we're not just keeping a golf course as a vineyard.
Well, and it's kind of interesting. We were talking a little earlier, like the way that you can sort of look over the rolling hills in the Willamette Valley and notice instantly probably who is spraying and who is not.
Exactly. I mean, you'll just drive through Amity and look up into the, like you say, the hills up there, and if there's no grass, there's chances are they're using something to...
There's a reason why there's no grass.
Right. And, you know, I mean, that goes right, all of that, anything you put into that soil goes right into the leaf and the grape and into then into our waters. So, I mean, I'm a proponent of organics, but and biodynamics and these other types of certifications that are great. But I'm not, like, in my wine selection that I do at the co-op, I'm more interested, I think quality comes with that. And so, you know, if a farmer isn't certified organic, that's not the most important thing to me. As much as the quality, and you know, I know that with Susie and her wines, that it's a high quality product, and it's just wonderful tasting wines.
Thank you, Mick. We definitely pay attention to the flavor. I think that's the paramount objective to have to produce wines that are beautiful in their own right and to speak of our place. But it is also true, just having read an article about Oregon, well, this is actually more international, biodynamic farming, that in any case, when you're making these wines organically or biodynamically, the quality of the wine still has to be the really the I want to say the primary focus with that what you're producing, because the consumer does pay attention. They're very smart, and they're learning all the time how to differentiate, you know, wines that are weak. I call them weak because they have little flavor or little substance to them, and wines that stand out with a whole symphony of flavors. And that's where we're going to also get into food talk, because it's really about just enjoyment.
And pairing it with food. So you both used the term biodynamic. And, you know, I think Krista and I might both know what you're talking about, but just, I think there's a lot of people out there who don't know what biodynamic means, and I'm not asking you for, like, a textbook definition. I think, quite frankly, we said earlier we could do an entire show about biodynamics, and we probably should.
Oh, for sure.
But if you can just maybe give a brief, you know, explanation of what biodynamics is.
Sure. At our farm, biodynamic means that we are very conscious of the cycles that our all of the organisms on the farm are passing through, and that we try to avoid interfering with the natural cycles, and in fact encourage all the positive evolution that is going on constantly. That means everything that is going on deep in the earth, to all the way to the fruit that we harvest, and to even the wines as they develop in the cellar. So we try to really avoid using a lot of additional substances in all those areas, but at the same time we recognize that sometimes it can be beneficial to enrich the earth, and we have some preparations that we use in biodynamics which have numbers. You know, preparation 500, for instance, is put on the bare ground, sprinkled on in great dilution, and we love to you know, do the things that we know are making a big difference. But it's not about magic. It's really about just, I think, bringing harmony to the environment.
Oh, I can't top that.
I know. That was great.
I know, for me, biodynamics, one thing that I've always thought about it is that there's such a tremendous amount of observation that goes into people who are farming or raising crops or animals biodynamically. And they're the people that seem to know intimately the most details of what's happening on their property from all of the different cycles, everything that's happening. It's a really fascinating process.
I want to say to that you know, we sometimes within the wine circle speak about large operations that claim to be biodynamic, and of course in Australia especially they have at times hundreds of acres of vineyards that are managed biodynamically. But we claim that you cannot do that, because you have to really walk the earth and you have to be there present physically, and I don't think you can do that from a plane yet.
No. Well, we need to take a little station break. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us, we are speaking with Susie Carlberg of Christopher Bridge Cellars, and also Mick Mitchell of Astoria Co-op, and a distributor of Mountain People's Organic Wine and Beer. And so we're having a great conversation about wine.
About wine. Susie, I'm curious, what kind of grapes do you grow and what different wines do you produce at your winery?
We began with Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir. Those are predominant Oregon varietals because they love the cooler climate. We've expanded since to some Muscat, Muscat Canelli, which actually comes from the Columbia Valley, which is a little bit more warm. But we are, I want to say, in more ways than one, pioneers. So we felt we could probably take a chance with that. And when it does ripen in those warmer years that we do get occasionally in Oregon, it is a beautiful fruit. And it makes some very special Muscat wines, which Mitch carries for us, Mick carries for us, actually. And we think that they are just superb.
Oh, it tastes so well.
Yeah, a superb expression, I think, from our place.
Yeah.
We've since planted some Sauvignon Blanc, which is not yet harvestable, but also this year we hope to harvest Ehrenfelser, which is a new, it's actually a clone coming from Germany, and we just planted it 3 years ago, so this would be the year to harvest, to get a harvest.
That's new to me. I haven't heard that varietal. So what's it?
Well, it's a cross between Riesling and Silvaner, so that gives a little bit away. It's a white wine, and it will hopefully be just as beautiful as what we've had before to drink from Okanagan, which is actually a producer of Ehrenfelser.
Oh,
and,
great.
As far as I know, we're going to be the first official Ehrenfelser producer in Oregon, so that's exciting.
How many acres do you have of vines?
We only have 15 acres currently.
Wow, that's a lot that you're producing on 15 acres. That's amazing.
The 15 acres is a lot of work. It's probably over 20,000 vines, and we have, you know, just basically the two or three of us on the farm. So we don't
hire. That is a lot of work.
Yes. We don't hire, you know, all this extra help, which makes it very much, again, a personal work. And it allows us, again, to really impart that personal touch and that decision on everything that we do, which you, I think, have a hard time doing when you're just sending crews out into a vineyard.
Harder to stay connected.
So you must have just finished the pruning cycle, or are you?
My husband started right before Christmas even to prune, and he finished in early March, but that was just because he felt that it was prudent to be early. Oftentimes people, you know, don't get really finished until about now because there hasn't been a rush this year. It's been very cool, and the buds are not opening up yet. The bud break is still hopefully coming soon. We're just really kind of wringing our hands a little bit because we do need to get going with the new the growth so we can actually have a harvest. But
I know, and this it's interesting. Vineyards seem to be so affected by weather. I mean, all farming is, and I certainly can understand that personally. But vineyards, it seems like there's this whole, I mean, so many processes that you have to go through. And then if you just get some cool weather at the wrong time, right around harvest, or things it rains at the wrong time, it can just ruin everything.
Oh, and at the end of the season, it seems like there's a measurement within the grape, how much the acidity is?
All the, you know, sugar, the acidity, we're trying to gauge that every day just to make sure that we're trying to get the peak moment for the harvest. But aside from that, we, you know, deal with weather, we deal with birds. Like last year was a very big bird problem year, and we have to make sure that we have everything in place in the winery. So a lot of things that have to all come simultaneously, sort of. And it's a little bit of magic because, you know, you just finally one day go out there and you get them all, and you try to, you know, have the best vintage ever. That's always the plan.
Now Susie, didn't you say that your husband had been a teacher down here on the coast?
Correct. He was actually a teacher in 1970 and 71. That was just at the beginning of his teaching career, high school teaching in Nekane High School, and he actually lived in Manzanita. Excuse me. He was at Nekane High for just 2 years as a German teacher, and forged some wonderful friendships there. And we've since been very much linked with the North Coast. And just love this part of the stretch of coast.
I'm curious how, since you're such a small winery, how did the co-op come to carry them? I mean, what was
did
that?
Did you just come knocking on my door?
I'm sure I did.
So what made you come out to the coast to think of this as a place to try and distribute your wines?
Well, you know, I have distributed for just about eight, and this will be in my ninth year this year in 2011, and have been all over Portland with our wines. Have found that we are not necessarily a perfect fit with quite a few of the stores and the restaurants. A lot has to do with, I think, the how we as personalities get along. I pay big attention to that because I'm not into making that a point of suffering for anyone. We look for a good fit most of all, whether that is the food that is served in a restaurant. The staff that works at the restaurant plays a big role because I want to be in touch with them. I want to have feedback. And in a store situation, it needs to be the price points that have to be there. But because the co-op here caters to customers that are very discerning and, I believe, recognize good quality when they see it and taste it, that was from the very beginning something that I felt was the right place to go. So, Mick, I was very happy that you took us.
Thank you for knocking on our door.
And you do tastings at the co-op.
Oh, we sure do.
How often do you do those?
Well, you know, we have a lot of owner appreciation days, and so those are often when we do tastings. Usually we'll do a tasting about every 6 weeks or so. I know that Susie's been down for at least two or three for sure since we've been in our new location. And I think there's even a commitment, if I'm not mistaken, to maybe down the road here.
Yes, for sure, because we had talked about doing an event, I think, in the fall, maybe, was it?
And it just depends on, you know, how it works for with your timing and that sort of thing. But we'll be laying out our calendar here, so be sure to check us out on our website, astoriacoop.org. And we also have a Facebook, which has been a popular, we'll let people know when those events are coming up.
It's always great. Good to know, yeah, to keep
now,
in touch with those things.
I know your wines are carried other places on the coast. I live in Cannon Beach, so I'm delighted that they're there. So tell us where else here you can get them.
As far as wine shops go, we're not in a lot of them. Again, it has to be a good fit. And Cannon Beach has a wonderful wine shop, the Wine Shack. Mm-hmm. Dean has carried our wines from the very start. And I have to say that was maybe in part due to the fact that my brother-in-law is the owner winemaker at Anderwell Winery in Washington State. It's a very fairly prominent winery. Mm-hmm. The label is worldwide, and that is, I think, how Dean first came to believe that maybe we were okay. But I do also believe that Dean really supports the small winemakers and has mm-hmm. always sought out those Oregon brands that are self-distributed because he knows that they are not likely going to be in Safeway or some other uh-huh. store. You know, where normally wines are purveyed.
Yeah.
Laurel at the
Laurel's Wine Shop.
Laurel Hood has had our wines also from the beginning, and that's because she's a fellow winemaker and a grower and supports the industry where mm-hmm. she can, and especially has, I think, a very fine palate mm-hmm. to, really pick up the fine nuances on the boutique type wines that we make.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't carry everyone's wine, but mm-hmm. we've been very blessed that she is on our side and has done a very good job of marketing for us. And then we really have to go straight up to Astoria because in the meantime we've not always been at the coast when other buyers were ready, so we just keep coming sort of back to Astoria, and mm-hmm. Of course the co-op carries us and mm-hmm. has probably most of the wines there that anyone has.
Yeah. That's
wonderful.
I didn't realize that.
Now, because we live on the coast, mm-hmm. let's talk a little about wines that go well with seafood mm-hmm. and your wines in particular. What do you suggest for pairings?
Well, when it comes to, the reds, which is Pinot Noir, which is the only varietal that that we really have in the reds, I just always recommend that the grilled salmon is a great fit. Uh-huh. It's just made in heaven, I think, that mm-hmm. The combination. And other than that, we drink Pinot Noir even for just appetizers, and you can oftentimes do all sorts of creative little appetizers that go well with a red wine, also like Pinot Noir, because it's a lighter, fruitier wine that I think complements seafood so well.
Mm-hmm.
It has
it's interesting how people don't, there's still this perception that you're supposed to drink white wine with seafood and red wine with meat.
Yeah.
And so that's not true.
Well, with Pinot Noir, it's not that way because our Pinot Noirs are not, they're not, 90% Pinot Noir or 80% Pinot Noir, mm-hmm. like some Pinot Noir that you find in the store. They're 100% Pinot Noir, and so they're a little bit lighter mm-hmm. in color. And even if you want to kind of imagine that there's a texture to the wine, there is. That is also, a plus with Pinot Noir because it has a way of sort of just coming to the level of the food that you're eating, whether that's red meat or white meats or even fish. Mm-hmm. And it is a wine that I think has a lot of merit in that field. So we always recommend Pinot Noir with seafood. But the white wines are, I think, predominantly the wines that we mm-hmm. love with seafood, because I brought a recipe today for shrimp cakes with wasabi tartar sauce.
Ooh.
That I think would be great with the Anne Louise because it is a little bit off dry, a little bit semi-sweet almost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, just a perfect match too.
Tell us, if you would tell us a little bit, Susie brought in a bottle, which is beautiful. The label is just gorgeous. I wish you could all see it. And maybe if you go to the co-op one day soon, you might be able to see it.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And you were telling us a little bit about it, that mm-hmm. it's not your normal Pinot Gris.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that?
Right. We made the 2009 vintage in two different tanks, and one was on the outside receiving, I believe, at the time, maybe a little bit less attention. And when we finally decided, oh, we needed to do something with this wine, we decided to stop fermentation when it was super cold. And the wine tasted as though it had reached that level of dryness that we normally look for. Mm-hmm. Because you do actually go a lot by your taste buds. We don't do everything in the lab, but we mm-hmm. believe that it is first and foremost our taste buds that tell us when a wine is ready to be moved along. So this wine, we decided we were going to just stop fermentation and let it rest mm-hmm. Over the winter, and then get it ready for bottling in the spring. And when we retasted it, it just had a much more sweetness to it than we had previously assumed or perceived. And I said to my husband, that's actually quite okay, because we have enough of both, the drier Pinot Gris, which is the mm-hmm. normal Christopher Bridge 2009 Pinot Gris. And we named this one Anne Louise, because my sister-in-law was a big fan of our Pinot Gris. And she's no longer with us, but she supported us greatly. And I think it's an honor to have her name again on a label. And I think it's going to be a great match for wine for dishes that are just a little bit on the spicier side, or for just beautiful drinking by itself.
Oh, I can't wait to try it.
I am looking forward to trying it. Mm. And so I have to ask, we were talking earlier about the Latin mm-hmm. phrase on the back, and Mark, our engineer, was making some comments about monks.
Well, about Jesuits.
Well, Jesuits. So would you tell us what it says?
Well, it is the Jesuit motto, and it is Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam, which means to the greater glory of God. We decided to have all of our labels from the very beginning feature that motto, because I think it speaks to what we believe in. Mm-hmm. My husband is not of a religious affiliation, but we do on the farm encounter so many variables, and there is so much that is unpredictable and overall just out of our hands, that we feel that it is really ultimately a good thing to acknowledge that, hey, whatever you find in that bottle, hopefully it'll just bring everyone, you know, to the recognition that it is a great thing that we can trust
something bigger.
Something much bigger.
Something bigger that we might not totally understand. Well, something else that I notice is Satori mm-hmm. Vineyards, I believe, is effortless perfection in Japanese. Yeah, so mm-hmm. you've got kind of a nice international theme going here.
Well, yeah, that was my husband's contribution in the beginning. We were searching for a good name for our vineyard and had a mentor of sorts who was a martial arts instructor.
Oh, interesting.
He was also a colleague of my husband's in his prior career as a teacher, as a high school teacher. Mm-hmm. We, for a while, asked ourselves what we really wanted the name to express, and ultimately came to believe that the natural springs that we have on our place, along with that sense of really the higher perfection, uh-huh. that would lend it hopefully the right feel in terms uh-huh. of what we really ultimately are inspired by.
Now, can you tell us your website? Because I'm sure people are going to want to look you up.
Okay. I would love to. It's www.christopher.bridgewines.com.
Great. And you can go to call and talk to Mick, or go into the Astoria Co-op.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be at the co-op quite a bit of the time, astoriacoop.org.
And if they have questions about the wines, they can usually find you lurking somewhere
Oh, yeah. Just come in and ask, or if you have requests or recommendations. Mm-hmm. We're always introducing new wine.
I need to mention that we actually do have wine by the glass at the Baked Alaska.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Okay.
Which is right here. And I do want to give them a special plug, because they are very great supporters of our brand, as well as the bistro, Bridgewater Bistro.
Okay,
wonderful.
Great.
So there's lots of places to try it. So,
well, thank you for joining us on today's Food Talk, fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast. And we thank you both so
thank
much.
Thank you both
for
so much
today.
For coming in. We really appreciate it. It's been fascinating. I look forward to trying this.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.